Hi, I'm Dr. Pam Peek, and welcome to episode 57 of Her, the podcast all about women, where we share the naked truth about her mind, her body, and her life. Today, we're going to be talking about a woman's primal body, her primal mind, and what? She could be a primal fat burner, too? We've got lots to talk about and a whole lot to be able to cover. But before we jump into that, I want to make sure you know that this episode of Her is made possible by our wonderful friends at Smarty Pants Women's Complete Vitamins. They're delicious once-a-day gummies that contain the complete vitamin, mineral, folate, and omega mix customized for women. You won't forget to take them because they taste so great. To learn more, please go to SmartyPantsVitamins.com. And just a quick reminder to hop on over to iTunes after our episode to rate this podcast and review us. Yeah, honey, listen, I read these things. You know, I love to get your feedback. So please, please, please run on over to iTunes afterwards. Want to hear from you. All right. It's time for Her.
Her, the podcast.
The naked truth about women.
Her mind, her body, her life.
It's all about her.
We're going to be talking today about primal women, primal body, mind, and getting into what a primal fat burner is all about. And there's no one better to describe all of this than Nora Gedgaudas. Now, who is this woman? Well, first of all, she's the author of Primal Fat Burner, Live Longer, Slow Aging, Superpower Your Brain, and Save Your Life with a High Fat, Low Carb Paleo Diet. She's also the author of Primal Body, Primal Mind, Beyond the Paleo Diet for Total Health and a Longer Life. Nora is a board-certified nutritional consultant and clinical neurofeedback specialist with over 20 years of clinical experience. She's a recognized authority on ketogenic, ancestrally based nutrition, a popular speaker and educator, and the author of the two books I just mentioned. Oh my goodness gracious. You know, I've been listening to the audio, and I also have the book, The Big Fat Surprise, by our pal Nina Teicholz. And Nina also notes that Nora is a unique, has given us a unique and profound contribution to the field, you know, really looking at this whole issue of what really is correct in our current nutritional knowledge. She has a new weekly program, Primal Power 52, and that's an invaluable source of information and education benefiting those interested in furthering their nutritional knowledge. So you want to make sure you get up on that one in a heartbeat. And you could do that by going to her websites at primalfatburner.com and Primal Power 52, and that's just the numbers, 52.com, as well as primalbody-primalmind.com. I'm exhausted, Nora. You're doing too much.
Too.
Yeah, man. Welcome to Her, the podcast all about women. Good Lord,
awesome.
This is just an amazing, cool set of books. I've got them both in front of me and 900 questions. You got an hour
I'll
and a half?
Yeah, I bet you do. Yeah, and it's, you know, it represents a whole lot of years of research, not just in perusing the peer-reviewed literature, but also in working with, you know, with clients. So,
But you know, you did some pretty wild stuff here. You were inspired by a summer spent living less than 500 miles from the North Pole, chilly, with a family of wild wolves and visiting among the scattered remnants of an ancient, is that Thule culture?
Yeah, Thule, yes.
There? Yeah, I knew I got that one right. Literally frozen in time. Oh my gosh, so amazing. First, before we get into this, tell me about, you know, how one book segues into another. If a woman is saying to herself, primal body, primal mind, what does that really mean?
Right. So I chose the term primal to discuss what I was trying to describe because it harkens back to a time that seems older somehow than what a lot of people are referring to as the Paleolithic, which most of what goes on in the paleo diet really isn't about the Paleolithic time period at all. It's more about the Mesolithic or Neolithic, mostly about the Neolithic. But Paleolithic technically is a term that suggests the period of our human evolution from about 2.6 million years ago until about 10,000 years ago. But because the term paleo gets so kind of tossed around, I chose the term primal to imply something older than what many people think. And, you know, what sort of the so-called more recent, a few thousand-year-old primitive, so-called primitive, you know, cultures in the world experienced as an environment is quite a bit different than what it was that we had going on prior to the last ice age, which ended rather abruptly, actually. It was a pretty cataclysmic end. And from the 2.6 million-year-old time period, which was the beginning of what was called the Quaternary Ice Age, which we're still in, by the way, we just happened to be in, you know, more of a period of glacial retreat than glacial advance, but all the way up until 10,000, roughly 10,000 years ago, more like 11,600 or so, you know, we shared this planet with at least 120 species more of what are called megafauna, right? Giant, you know, four different species of, you know, of elephants, even on, in North America, you know, woolly mammoths and mastodons and, you know, different types you know, woolly rhinos and giant sloths and giant aurochs, which are the predecessor to modern-day cattle and Irish elk and, I mean, all of these things. And they formed an actually very important part, we know from you know, the study of stable isotopic, human isotopic data from bone collagen, looking at all different periods of our evolutionary history, that was really they were a preferred source of nourishment for us. We ate other things as well, but what shows up in our collagen profiles is massive amounts of protein. Not only were we high-level carnivores, we were higher-level carnivores than wolves, bears, foxes, saber-toothed cats, you know, the other, you know, predators that we shared our environment with. And it's because we uniquely had this technology, the smarts and the technology to bring these huge animals down. A woolly mammoth has roughly 50% body fat, you know, and then not counting, you know, all the marrow and the brain tissue and the tongue and, you know, other fatty organs and things. And we would have gobbled up all of it. And, you know, you take down one big, fat, sassy woolly mammoth, you've got a family barbecue that's going to last, you know, a couple of weeks.
Well, so, you know, it's interesting in listening to you. I can only imagine there's some, you know, vegetarians out there just cringing, going, what?
Right.
You know, if we saw some good greens out there and stuff, why weren't we hopping on those? What was, you know, what was going on? Or did we do it all?
We may have some of that, you know, but the problem is that, and anyone who's taken a wild edible plant class, and I've done that sort of thing, it's a lot of work and a lot of effort. You're going around and, you know, you can only pick certain parts of the plant. Many of these plants actually are too toxic to consume in any significant quantity raw, so many would require... many that you pick nowadays would require extensive cooking to neutralize some toxic compounds and things like that. Well, we didn't have universal capacity to produce fire at will until, and according to the most recent research, maybe 75 to 100,000 years ago. And so the other part of the equation is that plants don't provide a whole lot of calories. And the kinds of plants that would have... you know, like starchy tubers and things like that. Again, if you eat a raw starchy tuber, it literally passes through your digestive tract as unusable. It has to be, in order for that starch to be utilized, gelatinized through a process of prolonged exposure to high heat in order to break that starch down, disrupt it from the cell walls, and make it available to a human digestive tract. There's also a lot of variability in our capacity to digest starch-based foods. And furthermore, so, and maybe the most important point of all, we don't, physiologically, there really is no basis for us having a diet based solely in plant foods. There's never been actually a single instance of one of our, in our immediate, you know, for instance, even our primate ancestors, the closest one to which we're related, the chimpanzee, even they eat meat. They kill and they hunt and they eat some meat. It's usually small animals. But they're also better designed than we are to eat a higher plant diet. They have, you know, we have a colon that make a, we have a much smaller digestive tract than they do, and we have a colon that makes up maybe 20% of our total digestive tract. A chimp has a colon that makes up at least 52%, and they, you see them, they have these barrel guts. They almost look like they drink beer all day. They are very well designed, which we are not, actually, to extract much more nutrition from plant foods. But here's a real kicker. The fact of the matter is that all large mammals are actually designed to get their primary caloric intake from fat. And I'm even talking about cows and sheep and goats and deer. Now, the way they get it is that cows get roughly 70% of all of their caloric intake from the bacterial fermentation of all of that fiber that they're consuming all day long. And if we're talking about ruminants, we're talking about animals that basically, you know, you watch what they do all day long. These are animals that are absolutely designed to make full use of a plant-based diet. That's all they eat. And they have to eat all day long to meet their nutritional requirements. But what happens is that when they ingest these plant foods, it's bacteria that take over and break down the cellulose and then synthesize nutritional compounds and synthesize something called butyric acid, which is a short-chain saturated fatty acid, which then forms the basis for the energy substrate that ruminants depend upon and herbivores.
Well, so when you're talking about dietary fat, in your book, Primal Body, Primal Mind, I always look for those sentences that start, the bottom line is, because sometimes that kind of cuts through it here. The bottom line here is that natural dietary fat is not at all our enemy, and that in the absence of dietary carbohydrate and with adequate protein, eating natural dietary fat can result in a far more satisfying, longer, and healthier life overall.
Yes.
And, you know, this is interesting because, you know, what has happened, as you know, in the nutrition industry and in science, you know, over the course of the last 50, 75 years, at least, certainly
science,
since Ansel Keys.
Right.
Yeah. And all the rest of it. You know, we've been taught through some very curious scientific studies that dietary fat was the culprit, and
right,
especially saturated fat and all the rest of it. Now what we're seeing is upgraded research, better epidemiologic studies, and a greater understanding of our past history as to what we, our DNA template, was really meant to do. And there's no question about it that we're now very seriously re-examining what the role of fat is in our diet. And, you know, a caution, and that is that, as you know, Nora, there is exquisitely large variation in everyone, in individuals out there. We can't just sort of, you know, blanket everybody and say, okay, you know, this is exactly the way you're going to metabolize whatever. Some people are better at this than others. But the key, I think, one of the things I really got out of reading your work is, once again, just like the other book that I had mentioned, The Big Fat Surprise, is really looking back in history and saying, wait a minute, you know, high quality dietary fat is absolutely integral to our nutritional blueprint, and that we need to have that, and we need to now reframe a lot of what's been espoused out there by educators as well as the media in terms of what to actually eat. Do you find that women, Nora, embrace this whole issue of the primal body, primal mind?
Women are going to can do extraordinarily well with this. Frankly, I do make the case, and I think I provide a lot of exhaustive referencing to support the case, that this really is the foundational dietary, the most healthy foundational dietary approach for humankind, that this is how we were actually really designed. And it's a matter of what other things might be going on to possibly interfere with that, with the metabolic switch from fat burning, you know, from sugar burning to fat burning. You know, most people are led to believe that we of necessity must have glucose as a primary source of fuel, and that's really only a misleading and inaccurate statement. We only require glucose as a primary source of fuel if we have metabolically adapted ourselves, and rather unnaturally, I might add, to a dependence on glucose as a primary source of fuel through what it is we habitually choose to eat. And, of course, U.S. Department of Agriculture's pyramid, you know, no bias there, has told us that we need to be basing the entire foundation of our diet on carbohydrate-based foods. This is a first in all of our human evolutionary history. There is no basis for this in evolution. There's no basis for this for us physiologically. That carbohydrate-based foods basically are very, very new to our species, and we are seeing the evidence of that. Now, we also know, you know, that a lot more, pretty recently, actually, in the last few months, the New York Times uncovered all kinds of documentation showing that it was, in fact, the sugar industry in the 1960s that basically bought and paid for certain research conclusions that were designed to hide, you know, the idea, to hide the fact, you know, that all of the emerging evidence was showing that it was dietary sugar that was the primary culprit in these burgeoning levels of
the refined and processed sugars. Yeah, it's the refined and processed sugars in a big way.
But guess what? All dietary carbohydrates, sugar and starch, is sugar once it hits your bloodstream. You know, we're not designed to deal with tidal waves of insulin, and you can spike your blood sugar faster with a baked potato than you can a candy bar. So when we're told to eat lots of grains and you know, potatoes and rice and beans, and you know, beans are a good 60% starch. As vegetables go, they have more protein than, say, broccoli, but, you know, it's not a complete protein either. So, and all of these things, what we've done is we've created a metabolic storm of epic proportions that has been degrading our health now for the last, you know, several decades. And the fact is that there was another study that came out in 2015 that looked at data from 1965 through 2011 and looked at, you know, what had been the standard government dietary guidelines, and it wanted to take a look and see just how closely we had actually been adhering to those guidelines, because we were being told we weren't paying attention to them, and then also what that resulted in. Well, not only were we very much following the rules, but it turned out that the more obediently we followed the rules, the more obese and the sicker we became as a society. That the standard government dietary guidelines that preach low-fat, high-carb basically, you know, have been eroding our health since the day those guidelines were established. And we know that the sugar industry had a hand in that. As well as, you know, there's certainly quite a bit of evidence to suggest the vegetable oil industry was, you know, had their grubby hands.
Well,
in that whole,
so I've got all these women out there in the Herb podcast land, Nora, and they're saying, oh my God, what am I supposed to eat? Am I supposed to live in ketosis all day? Am I allowed ever to deviate with, you know, vegetables and maybe grain or whatever? Help them understand what a day in the life of looks like so that we can start putting some practicality to this marvelous, you know, background history that you've just outlined for us. So live a day in the life of.
Live a day in the life of. Well, yeah, so basically, again, I use that primitive model of what we would have consumed as a foundational starting place. But to me, it's a starting place, not an endpoint. I also used human longevity research to figure out how to tweak these ancestral principles, which are the only sane, you know, rational starting place I can think of. But to tweak them to help maximize our potential for health. And, of course, I paid attention to the world that we live in today in order to further adjust some of this to make better sense of it. So basically what this amounts to is the only macronutrient out of proteins, fats, and carbohydrates for which there is no scientifically established human dietary requirement, not in any medical textbook, not in any textbook of physiology, is carbohydrates. There's no such thing as a carbohydrate deficiency anywhere. And because they are metabolically dysregulating, because they do damage in other respects, they're inflammatory, they create free radical activity, they're metabolically, deranging for us, it's a no-brainer. Leave them out to the extent possible. Keep it below 50 grams or so a day. Moderate your protein intake. Even though our ancestors ate a whole lot of meat, that doesn't mean that we need to eat a lot of meat to be optimally healthy. We need a certain amount of complete protein, and animal source foods provide the best basis for that complete protein. And one reason why is that, unlike an herbivore, we don't have a fermentative-based digestive system. We have a hydrochloric acid-based digestive system. And it's that hydrochloric acid process that basically guides the rest of what happens during our digestive cycle. And when you don't have sufficient hydrochloric acid, you're not eating, enough complete protein to do that, to trigger that. You're not absorbing minerals either, and you're also setting up a chain reaction that is going to impair your digestion of other dietary inclusions. So this is the way we're designed. We're designed to get the fats directly from the animals that have synthesized some of the more sophisticated fats for us, including...
All right. Well, then there's a herb podcast woman out there sitting saying, okay, I wake up in the morning, what am I supposed to eat?
Okay.
Should I avoid Starbucks completely with all those little pastries and
yes.
little goodies?
like the plague that
is. Yeah.
But, so an example, breakfast... there are a lot of days where I just don't even really think about breakfast. But this is the thing about being a fat burner, is that you're going to have constant flow of energy if you completely adopt a fat-burning metabolism. You'll have a constant flow of energy that is very even burning and constantly, comfortable even in the absence of regular meals. You won't have cravings. You don't have to eat every 2 hours or whatever else. But if you are going to eat breakfast, you can have like a rich cup of like full fat bone broth with or without other things like maybe fibrous vegetables or greens or meat added to it, or maybe a couple of pastured eggs. And again, I put a very strong emphasis on food quality in this book in an uncompromising way. Your meat should always come from 100% grass fed and finished sources, not feedlot meat. And you want everything produce-wise that you consume to be organic and biodynamic. I prefer that people get a lot of this stuff either directly from the farmers that grow or raise them or, but again, you just have to be really careful about your sourcing. You can go shop farmers markets and things like that. It's a lot less expensive than some of the higher-end specialty markets that claim to, specialize in natural foods. This morning I had a small... pastured pork patty, for instance. It was just about 2-3 ounces in size. It wasn't that big. And I sautéed some onions in a little bit of duck fat, and then I and poured that over the top. And then I also had about a tablespoon or two of cultured veggies, right, of vegetables that had been cultured. And cultured vegetables actually have a lot more nutrition in them than the raw vegetables from which they were made. They're marvelous. They're great for digestion, they're great for a lot of things. And I had that on the side. And I'm telling you, I'm not going to be hungry till tonight at all.
There's no question about that. What do you think of the Mediterranean diet?
Well, again, what Mediterranean diet? Because there are lots and lots of different definitions of what's called
right.
the so-called Mediterranean diet. It's sort of interesting. When you look at the Paleolithic humans, I know that's not what we're talking about, but this comes to mind rather quickly. There was a recent study published showing that the Paleolithic humans that lived in that region, even though they had considerable access to seafood, they actually preferred hunting the large megafauna. That's what they preferred. We were fat hunters because fat to our physiological makeup essentially means survival. And survival trumps everything else.
But what I'm trying to understand is that, here you have the Mediterranean area, and you have, you know, huge, vast quantities of these olive trees and olive oil.
Olive oil is fine. It's a traditional fat. I don't know that our Paleolithic, I'm sure our Paleolithic ancestors were eating the olives. But the oil itself, it's not how great for you olive oil is. It's how bad for you it's not. You know, these omega-9 oils, you know, it's really interesting. At least half of what makes up a steak is, you know, is unsaturated fats. And, you know, monounsaturated fats, which we're talking about dominating in olive oil and avocado oil and that sort of thing, you know, are actually very well represented in animal source foods. We were told to be fat phobic because that served the interests, the economic interest of the sugar industry, and that, you know, fat was the fall guy for what the sugar industry was trying to avoid having. I mean, they were paying Harvard researchers to provide these so-called studies saying, yep, there's absolutely no doubt at all that saturated fat and cholesterol are the cause of heart disease and obesity. And now we know from numerous meta-analysis studies that's an absurdity. It's fiction. It's not true. But it has been restated so many times that people just sort of automatically assume that that's what is true.
And very, very important people have adopted that. The American Heart Association and right on down the line, dietitians, always showing you the little vegetables and back and forth. You know, one of the things that I think also is extremely important to understand. I said this before, I'll say it again. There's an exquisite amount of individual variation out there. We are now the products of all the wild and crazy things that have come before us. You actually brought this up in a beautiful way when you, in Primal Body, Primal Mind, you said, what generation of Pottinger's cat are you?
Yeah.
Could you tell everyone what that means?
Right. Well, Francis Pottinger was a medical doctor that was known for his long range. It was like a 10-year, I believe, study that he did with cats, with multiple generations of cats, in which he fed them different types of diets. He fed one cat, you know, raw food diet. One group of cats, another group of cats got, got cooked food, and then the other group of cats got all processed food. And although there were some decided health changes in the processed and, you know, cooked food groups and, you know, the first generation, where it really started to show was in subsequent generations of cats, where gradually they began to show up with major birth defects, with skeletal abnormalities, with increasingly neurotic behavior. Now the cats that continued to eat a diet that was natural for them, which was just basically raw meat, they thrived throughout the course of the study. There were never any adverse changes, but, you know, the totally cooked food and particularly the processed food cats, by 10 generations in, couldn't even reproduce anymore. And so
how long does it take to reverse something like this? And you're like, oh my God, I'm a mess. You know, I come from four generations of a nightmare. Now what?
Right, exactly. It takes another four generations. The study seems to suggest that it takes about four generations to fully reverse within your, you know, genome.
Well, you know what's really happening here too is that whole issue of something I've spoken about many times on the podcast, epigenetics, and that is, you know, really placing markers on your genes and altering gene expression. Going back to the early work of epigeneticists who discovered that, good Lord, it affects 2, 3, 4 generations easily. And so much of this is based upon the quality of what you eat and the quantity. If you look at the feast and famine work that was done, you know, with Overkalix in Sweden and all the rest of it. So, you know, what I really want to make sure everyone out there in her podcast land knows is that these are two books that you really need to grab. And mostly because, one, you're getting a huge round gift, a comprehensive gift of both historical knowledge it's important for you to understand how Nora and other experts like her have actually come to these conclusions. It's important because most of us, you know, most of you out there, I mean, I'm a physician and I'm a Pew scholar in nutrition, so I kind of already been swinging with the program here. But most of you have not. You just read the headlines, so you go along with what, you know, your friendly neighborhood dietitian's been saying forever. But things have actually changed rather radically. And it's important for you to stay abreast of this, which is why I really want you to run on out there and grab Primal Body, Primal Mind, Beyond the Paleo Diet for Total Health and a Longer Life, which is an absolutely fabulous book. And then, of course, Nora's book, her most recent book, Primal Fat Burner. And in this case, find out how you can become a primal fat burner. And that's an important thing, because one of the most important and significant conclusions here is that it will truly improve your health and longevity. And I know that sounds so counterintuitive based upon what you probably heard out there, but you know something? You need to read this and you need to sit down and have a conversation about what this really means to you. How can you take baby steps toward understanding this and also maybe beginning to incorporate this brand new template into your life? So this is just a fabulous, wonderful segment for you to listen to again and again so you understand where Nora is coming from. I really encourage you to get over to her websites. Again, primalfatburner.com, primalpower52.com. Learn about her whole program there. And primalbody-primalmind.com. Get the books, go to the website, learn, take a moment to do this. It's really, really important because this is not cutting edge. This is bleeding edge knowledge, really important. Nora, one last thing that you want to share with everyone is a parting gift.
One last thing?
Just a quickie.
Just a quickie. I can tell you that Primal Fat Burner does offer you, you know, a 21-day meal plan. It handholds you through the process of adopting, you know, this in the most natural human way of eating, and gives you a good 60 recipes, and a lot of which are really my own and are just like amazing. And you know, and it, all toward the end of reclaiming what should be your primal birthright, which is total
excellent
health and a long and healthy life.
Yep. Coming full circle. We have been talking to Nora Gedgaudas. Get the books. Speaking of get the books, get on over to the website, because we've got some gifts of great knowledge and practical information that will be a real life changer for you. Thank you so much, Nora, for being on the Her Podcast. Oh boy, remember to catch every single episode of Her, including this one. Just hit subscribe on iTunes or on our show page at RadioMD.com. And please take, just a moment or two, rate this podcast on iTunes, because we really want to understand where you're coming from, get some feedback, what'd you get out of this, and plus, we just plain love to hear from you. So please, 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 and I read every one of these. I'm Dr. Pam Peek. Follow me on Twitter at PamPeakMD, and you can also check out our Her Show page at RadioMD.com for all of our past episodes. Hey, thanks for listening, and stay well.